Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing Tanzania's ongoing political crisis. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Nicodemus Minde, a researcher with the Institute for Security Studies in Nairobi. He was previously a senior lecturer at the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences, International Relations Department at the Catholic University of Eastern Africa, among many other roles that he has played in the past. Nicole, it's a great pleasure to have you join me today, and I look forward to our conversation.
Thank you, and I'm glad to be with you today.
Brilliant, brilliant. So let's start off. Tanzania has previously been seen as a very political stable country, but in recent times we see an ongoing political crisis. What is this crisis about?
Well, of course, as you have rightly put it, Tanzania has been relatively stable, one of the most stable countries in Africa, and of course this stability is further seen by the fact that many of its neighbors have experienced crises of different magnitude and scales and length. Of course, if you look at Tanzania's neighbors, such as the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, Burundi, even Kenya to a great extent, Uganda, all these countries have experienced some form of political instability of various scales. And of course, so we can safely say that Tanzania has been one of these very stable countries in the region, in view of probably what has been happening in the neighboring countries. But again, you also look at Tanzania's democracy, albeit it been very nascent or very emerging, but it has also experienced some form of democratic shifts from one president to the other. So the periodic elections, albeit the fact that it is within one political party, but this is not, you know, you can contrast it with many of the countries of its neighbors. So the recent occurrences post-election really is a taint in Tanzania's long-held image as this very most stable countries within the East African region and in Africa in general, but also looking at that, Tanzania has also been one of these countries that has been a conflict habitat for many of these countries. So it also now really puts the country in bad light, especially after what has happened in post-election.
So in October, just less than a month, Tanzania had this presidential and parliamentary election where President Samia Hassan won about nearly 98% of the votes. Which I think it's odd, you know, looking at so which itself speaks to the allegations of electoral fraud and other kind of allegations. Can you speak to that?
Well, of course, the general context of the 2025 election was are marred by a lot of incidences. And of course, the post-Paul violence, as we have seen it, I think was just a culmination of what we analysts say has been long coming. You put the number of the victory margin to 98%. Again, this happens in the context of the ruling party really going it by itself. There was no worthwhile opposition. The most credible opposition was actually either disqualified or its main leader been facing treason charges in the courts, and of course been in prison. So, and of course there's been lots of demands for electoral reforms, institutional reforms, and of course the ultimate issue has been the demand for a new constitution. So the events leading up to the October elections were just a culmination of long-held grievances amongst the people, and of course the number, the 98% voter turn, voter 98 victory, of course it's almost 100%, actually really puts Tanzania into the leagues of other very authoritarian countries, or what we call electoral authoritarianism, where elections are done, but of course in the midst of very authoritarian practices.
We've been seeing, and I'm currently working on an edited book volume where I'm looking at liberal democracy and its utility in Africa and stuff. And you mentioned electoral authoritarianism. But one thing we've been seeing across the continent recently, it's a rising frustration by a particular demographic, which they call Gen Zs. So we've seen it, we saw it in Mozambique, we saw it in Cameroon, we've seen it in Kenya with the financial ties bill, where we've currently saw it in Madagascar. But we've seen it all of these places. So how does Tanzania fit into the narrative of youth being frustrated with the state of democracy and then calling for change or a shift away from the status quo? Or does Tanzania present a unique case?
Not at all. Actually, I've just written one piece for my organization where it shows some form of links of youth disenfranchisement and youth demands, which is actually an extension of most of, if you look at the trends in the past 2 years or so in Africa, starting from the case studies that you have mentioned in Kenya, in Madagascar, in Cameroon, even in Ivory Coast, and in many of these countries, in Nigeria, in Ghana. So there's a form of this, what you call a youth explosion, where there's some form of a demand for more increased accountability amongst the youth. And of course, there are many variables that point to this case. For example, this is a youth that is highly educated, highly exposed, techie savvy. They have smartphones and they can be able to really see what is happening across the world. And it is from this you can see they also want better lives for themselves. And you can see, for example, there is very, the lack of education, lack of employment opportunities amongst other critical issues. For example, in Kenya, there's the issue of corruption and all these things. So issues to do with general governance processes in the continent. And of course, this is also mirroring other countries like Nepal and Bangladesh that have also experienced similar youth explosion as a result of youth demanding increased accountability. So Tanzania is not a unique case, to just answer a question straight. It is just an extension of a trend that we are seeing. And it's not just Tanzania will not just be an end. I think many other countries will experience this phenomenon.
So Africa is has a bulging youth population, which presents an opportunity as well as depending on how you see it. But we've also been seeing another trend we've been seeing across Africa besides this youth protest and youth kind of like political consciousness is which is also linked to it, is we see the post-colonial panic parties like ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe. We saw Botswana recently, you know, the party in Botswana, old party, lost the election in Botswana. So what we're seeing is there seems to be a new generation that is distant from that anti-colonial sentiment. And they're looking, like Riley mentioned, governance issues that are like pertinent to them. But CCM has managed to remain since independence in Tanzania. Do you think there's a new wave coming? Do you think, you know, this, how do you see CCM within that narrative of old post-colonial parties? How can you relate that to that kind of narrative?
Well, of course, CCM is just but another example of what we call African Liberation Parties. And if you look at these African Liberation Parties, especially those in Southern Africa, the likes of ANC in South Africa, the likes of SWAPO in Namibia, the likes of Frelimo in Mozambique, ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe. So you can see some form of, you know, these parties have a long histories, and they bring some form of nostalgia, where these, you know, they fought for this liberation, fought for independence. But there's something interesting that is happening. The current population were born after these struggles, and they are disconnected most from these narratives of independence, of these historical figures, the likes of Mandela, the likes of Mugabe, the likes of Nyerere, the likes of Samora Machel, the likes of Sam Nujoma, and the like. And it's a generational change. But again, there's something that's very interesting that you need to observe, is that the vote share of these countries, when these African Liberation Parties, that their vote share has really been going down election after election. And you can look at that in even SWAPO in Namibia. ANC has been forced into a government of national unity with the Democratic Alliance in South Africa. We saw political violence in Mozambique, and ZANU-PF was also really challenged, and theirs has also been the same. And of course, now CCM with this. My take is that there is some form of a generation shift, which is away from this nostalgia of freedom fighting. And now there's a demand for new ideas, fresh ideas, new ways of doing things. And this is a generation that is unfazed by what Nyerere said, for example, what the CCM party had brought by bringing about, let's say, liberation. So you can see that connect that really points to this. But for Tanzania, I think the CCM remains very hegemonic in its nature. And it's not because that it is, people really love it. It's because of how the state and the party seems to be in one, you know, state and party is just like one thing. There's a lot of control by the security forces. Institutions are controlled by the party and many of those things, really. And for me, as a researcher and an academic who views and studies parties, I think there is some form of what happened in post October 29th is a rebellion against this party, in the sense that the people really need to speak up. They need to really find ways, alternative ways of expressing themselves. And this is a generation that is less concerned about, you know, this nostalgic memories of the past.
There's one thing. So when President Magufuli died, and the vice took over, the current President Martha, she inspired sort of maybe her camp demeanor, and that was inspired some kind of hope. And people, again, she also been a woman as well, and stuff like that. So what has changed from a woman president that inspired such hope and positive to now. I've heard issue of internal party wranglings, politics, and you rightly mentioned as well, there's always been a spotlight on the president and no spotlight on party politics and party kind of like violence. What how can you speak to this sort of I don't want to call it paradox, but a shift from that to now, to a woman that is now described as that is heading or overseeing an oppressive party, oppressing, silencing oppositions and media, restricting or shrinking media spaces. What is behind this shift?
Without a doubt, you have rightly put it, like when she came into power in 2021, following the death of Magufuli, there was a fresh of, a fresh of breath air, because the 6 years of the President Magufuli, there was a lot of backsliding in the democratic context of Tanzania. President Samia came in with this new entry of reforms, speaking the language of reforms, speaking the language of reconciliation, speaking the language of dialogue with the opposition. And there was some form of optimism. And again, she brought in this, as a woman, a Muslim woman, as you rightly put it, probably there was that empathetic motherly instincts and motherly love that she brought. And many people are bought into that idea. But 2 years down the line, I think there are many factors, probably even as researchers, we keep on speculating. But of course, there are those internal CCM dynamics, the ruling party dynamics really probably could have really influenced how she perceives and how she goes about the internal schisms. My suspicion is that there are sort of divisions within the party as a result of that, the break of from Magufuli. So she needed to consolidate on one hand, and also there are these aspects for reforms. So balancing between reforms and consolidation of her rule really somehow complicated the political matrix. And I also, I'm still researching in depth on this. I think there's also another factor where we see what you call this capture of the party by elites. And when I talk about here, elites is economic elites, rich tycoons who want big projects and concessions from government and external. So I think this, and you can see also this also happened in South Africa with the ANC. So there's this form of super cadres some form of infiltration or of the party from what we call this big moneyed oligarchs, if you may call it. For me, as an African scholar, I see once there is that entrant, there is oftentimes democracy tends to take a back seat.
So this would be my opinion. I don't know if you agree with it. Like I think, so I will look at Nigeria, for instance. I'll look at during the past two government, it was good old President Jonathan, who I think they negotiated for him to stay for a one time, and then he wanted to go a second time, and he created this kind of like rupture. But then again, if you look at Africa, like you've been mentioning, you see in Cameroon where Bobby has maintained power, you see in Rwanda with Paul Kagame, you see in all this, you see in even Ivory Coast, you mentioned earlier. Do you think that the need to entrench ones in power can be a strong factor towards all of the state capture? You were talking about the reforms, the quest for constitutional reforms. Should Africa be really considering one term? And that will make you do what you need to do without thinking of consolidating power, being in power. Or again, that is on one hand. The second, what were the kind of reforms that the people of Tanzania were agitating for?
Well, I think democracy has no one formula. I think there are different ways in each country's conduct democracy. Of course, there is that one template of what democracy entails, you know, are the tenets of democracy, which include equality, human rights, good governance, rule of law. There are those standard things. But of course, the conduct of democracy varies in terms of what really constitutes democracy. For example, there's the liberal democracy, there's the social democracy, there's the representative, there's, you know, with different factors. So you ask the question whether the one-term type of democracy will be good. There are countries that go, you know, do 5 years, others do 4 years, others do 7 years. And I'm a firm believer in countries choose to do what they want to do, what works for them. And as long as it works for them in a proper way, I think it's okay. But for Tanzania, the next question you've asked, what really are these reforms that people have been demanding? Of course, one of the critical reforms is, you know, the world is experiencing periodic changes in terms of innovation, technology, and what really education, and, you know, we're in the age of AI and all that. So Tanzania has a very old constitution, 1977, which is a very colonial constitution, where it places a lot of power on the president. The president, you know, I'll just give you but an example. Every week or every month, the president makes appointments. So, you know, it's just like every day you open the, you know, either the newspaper or your Twitter feed, you just see the president has made this appointment. And it is now, people think like this is a superhuman who appoints everybody in the country. So you are left to wonder what we call the imperial presidency. So Tanzania has that particular problem. And of course, there are many other issues that Tanzania demands. Is, of course, the electoral framework, which really gives a much you know support or advantage to the ruling party. The president is the one who appoints all the members of the electoral commission, the members of all judiciary, the members of parliament. You know, it's just like the president is this demigod who has all the powers and all that. So there's some form of a need to really demystify this role of the president, but also empowering institutions. For me, I think democracy is about empowering institutions. Democracy is about decisions being made by a multiplicity of people of different calibers, you know, making decisions. It's about the youth, it's about the women, it's about those with disability. It is about everyone in that society. As it stands, there's that big problem, and especially the key problem, which is the institution. For example, right now, the president is the one who can pardon, you know, let's say a person who is facing treason. So all these powers, it is the president has to go and tell the judge or the chief judge that, okay, now please release this guy or continue being in jail. So you can understand. So there's no room for the separation of powers. And this really is what maybe I think really ails the country. Of course, there are many other domestic internal issues that are present, but ultimately I think there is a need to change that particular you know, the way the president and of course the structure of government institutions, the security forces, you know, and many other things.
That's very interesting, because again, a lot of since independence, we've been talking about what system works for Africa. And some people, you've mentioned electoral authoritarianism, people have mentioned them, different kind of stuff. People have looked at the Paul Kagame style, where you say that there seems to be more like someone that's been powerful like 30, 40 years. But you can then say, oh, but there's an economic. I don't know if that's a perceptible or that is a force, but see, there's an economic growth. So, you know, maybe you can authoritarian, whatever name they call it.
Call it benevolent. Benevolent dictatorship.
Benevolent dictatorship, they call it a different kind of name. A lot of people have also started the one party with them and tried to link it to maybe pre-colonial African, the king, the things like this. But again, one interesting thing about Tanzania that I've read about is Tanzania has more than 100 languages or ethnicity, like many African countries. But it has managed to I think it's Julius Nyerere's brilliant policy, managed to avoid ethnic divisions or ethnic-related conflicts. So how do you, but then you compare that to other places like Nigeria, like even Rwanda that had a genocide, and say, how do we come with a system that works for us in Tanzania? Can we look at such antecedent and look at how they've been able to do that and say there seems to be some promising stuff? So what is lacking here? What's that unique system that Tanzania needs to adopt?
You know, one of the greatest achievement that Nyerere did, our founding leader or president, was to, you know, what we call the national building project. Tanzania is quite a diverse country. If you visit Tanzania, it's also quite big geographically, over 120 ethnic groups, which are very different from each other. And you also left to wonder how he actually did unite the country into one very united country that speaks one language. And this you can contrast it, let's say, with its neighbors in Kenya, for example, that has grappled with the question of ethnicity or negative ethnicity. Mm-hmm. So Tanzania is this very united country. Of course, it has also joined with the you know, what we call Tanganyika, joined with Zanzibar in 1964 to form what is known today as the United Republic of Tanzania. So you can see there's this very solid political model that has been set up. And of course, there was this attempt by Julius Nyerere, an economic blueprint that is quite unique in the Ujamaa philosophy, which failed, admittedly, by him. It was an attempt at socialism and building some form of a very equal society, which again, the legacy still remain up to today. But what now Tanzania needs is a leap into the future, a leap into the great, into what the world is, where the world is headed, which is a transformation in education, transformation in agriculture, transformation in manufacturing and technology. And this is, I think, every country's vision. A country envisions that it educates its people. It envisions that it produces, it is self-sufficient in terms of food security. It is also self-sufficient in terms of manufacturing, where it produces what it can consume. And I think Tanzania needs an economic transformation. CCM still rides on these legacies of Nyerere and the like, which again, they are good, but I think now the world is headed in a very different direction. And people are competing today. If you ask me, I've traveled. A Tanzanian will compete with a Nigerian. A Tanzanian will compete with a Ghanaian. So this is a very competitive society and a world where we don't have to really, and of course, because the world is very open and diverse, and there's this globalization. So we need that type of drive away from, you know, this petty, nostalgic memories of the past, of what Tanzania was in, you know, 40 years ago, which I think is quite a tired argument.
I agree with you. But if we come back a bit to the elections and look at the reactions or responses of international and regional government, what would you say, especially international government, where when you're talking about elite capture of the state, in some cases as well, whether in the literature or even practically, empirically, you see that there's also international, you mentioned DRC at first, there's also the international dimension where a lot of people have written where there's no true intention to to promote democracy, or in a way where, I guess what I'm saying in a sense is the response to President Hassan's oppressive visit, do you think that goes far enough? Or do you think that also matches current trends? Looking at it against the recession, receding of democracy in other places like America as well, does that embolden President Hassan, for instance? And does the African Union also has the moral authority, where we look at what's happening in other places, where there's no even approach to authoritarian dictators, not just coup plotters? What do you say to that?
Without a doubt, you're right. For anybody like myself who studies democracy and democratic trends, there's some form of a retreat of democratization. And we are now moving towards more authoritarian or, you know, semi-authoritarian systems. And that's why in the United States, there's talk of President Trump running for a third term, which is quite, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that was something very unimaginable in our world right now. But now there are talks, even if maybe it might not actually go for the third term. But again, you can see some form of trends in Europe, the rise of very far-right governments. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, this is, you add to what you call the rise of populism, very populist leaders and all that. So there's some form of, if you look at different democratic surveys, democratization surveys from Freedom House in Africa, for example. We have Afrobarometer and many other, statistics that show there's some form of receding. And of course, you talk about in Africa, there was a very interesting statistic that in as much as many Africans, and that is a survey of 2024, that as much as many young Africans really support democracy, they will not mind some form of military takeover. Mm-hmm. And that's why you can see there is some form of excitement with this Brahma Traore, Tanzania during this crisis. There was talk that, guys were just waiting. Where is the military to come and save this country? And even in many West African countries, there's that. So there's some form of disillusionment of democracy. Mm-hmm. Why is that the case? We scholars, we will want to answer that question or ask that question. Why is it that we're experiencing this? One, probably people will say, and scholars, and I know scholars who have argued that the democracy has failed to yield economic development. So there's some form of a dearth in that. So whenever they, and then they will look at other case studies or, for example, China, for example, they say, look, China seems to be doing very well economically, but it is not a democracy. They give other case studies to justify their claims. So you can see there's some form of disillusionment, and you ask yourself, you've asked me whether it emboldens Hassan. And President Samia, I think it is quite true, because first of all, and this is a subject I've been thinking a lot of late, aid is a bad thing. The aid that is given to many of these African countries with conditions, but it acted as some form of like a control, like, look, you can't do elections and declare yourself 98%, or do elections and the person who is a direct contender is in facing treason charges. That mm-hmm. would not have happened whenever there was this exchange of aid. Mm-hmm. But again, with the aid issue right now with Donald Trump and the conceptual West, it really gives room for countries to do whatever they want. And there was some form of, they say, look, who are you to tell us? For example, look, even the United States, they say you want a third term. So there's some form of like a free fall, like we can all do whatever we want. And it's quite, and it's what we call the crisis of the current globe. The global space is a form of democracy crisis, and I'm afraid we are in a downward spiral.
Yeah, I agree with you. But then there's similar stuff in Senegal.
Yeah,
and it turned out positive at the end of the day, where the president was the current president at the time was trying to oppress the opposition, and even the main political power was facing similar stuff. I think Treza was in prison before we had this, but there was a quick turnaround and the democracy was saved. So we could look at Senegal and say, okay, this offers a gleam of hope for us. So I guess the question now is, how do we open in Tanzania, before I come to the last question, how do we open space for a credible, effective opposition that stands a chance of challenging? How can opposition mount a great challenge in Tanzania?
You know, Michael, democracy, you know, people are naturally inclined to either oppose or support whenever they are, once you create institutions that are credible. And then there's this arms of government that really checks in on how society operates, because societies or people are very sophisticated. We oftentimes underestimate our sophistication. Mm-hmm. We create civilizations, we create laws, we become very innovative. So societies know how to regulate themselves. Even in very oppressive societies, including, for example, Russia, even China, there are elements of opposition. So that is how society is. We cannot all support one thing. Neither can we all like one thing. It is completely absurd. So what are therefore the conditions for good democracy? I think it's simple. We need to create societies where the rule of law is paramount. Mm-hmm. And societies, and I say this again and again, you cannot have a society if there is inequality, or you cannot find justice in a court of law. Look, I'm aggrieved. I go to court and I expect the court gives me justice. So that is how societies create, and you become civilized societies. But if you do not have those ingredients of where you are aggrieved, you go to court, where there is representation, and I want to contest, and there's competition, it's Michael and myself, and we want to, so you go to the electorate and you say, for me, my policy is this, and my ideas compete with yours, and the best idea wins. That's a society. Then without that, you create a society that is completely stagnant. So every society thrives from merit. Every society flourishes from aspects of justice, equality, rule of law, good governance, and of course those are the elements that make societies flourish. And even opposition to where I'm aggrieved, I compete with you, Michael, and I've lost, I congratulate you, thank you very much, all the best, next time we compete. So for Tanzania, I think this idea of 98%, I think, is completely absurd. And I think it is just an insult to the general, the collective intelligence of our people, that look, that I can win 98%. Elections, as someone has said, elections are a texture of which society is. And there's no society that the texture is, the mirror where it is completely smooth. People are different. People have different ideas. People have different perceptions. And it is elections are, produce these differences. And that's why we find that 98%, even in Russia, it was not like that.
I agree with you. So let's come to the last question and say, what do you see? How do you see the political trajectory of Tanzania in the light of all of this conflict, contradictions? What do you see? Do you see? Does it look bleak? Does it look promising? What do you see, at least in the next, let's say, President Samia is to be there in the next, I don't know, I think 5 years for Tanzania. What do you see in the next 5 years? What do you see happening?
You know, Michael, every society has what we call a breaking point, or a point where, or an event that things will never be the same again. And I think the events of October 29th really it shows that Tanzania is in some form of maturity, that this fear has been, the fear is gone. And I think even now, Tanzania and the politicians or the ruling party will be aware that, look, we're not now dealing with a population that is dormant, a population that is we can just manipulate. This is a very different generation. For me, you ask the future. I think this is a break point for Tanzania in the sense that it will be, other people call it the Tiananmen moment, what happened in China. And every country has that period where now we it's like a break away from the past into the future. And how will that happen? There are those countries that go back, retreat. If you look at Sudan, for example, in 2003, Libya in 2011, there are those that there's a breakpoint for greater success, and then there are breakpoint for degeneration. For me, I hope Tanzania, this is a breakpoint for further movement towards more democratic ideals, new constitution, and of course, a people just a society and a country where everyone has the ability to really make sense and a positive impact to their society.
All right, Nicole, we'll leave it at that. And I share your optimism and hope that Tanzania, which has always been a beacon of stability, regains its stability and then work together for the benefit of everyone rather than a few. But thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your insight. And I wish you all the best for the rest of your day. And I'll be in touch shortly.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for tuning in today. It's a pleasure to have you join me today. As usual, join me to thank our guest, Dr. Nicodemus Minde, for his rich and very relevant insights into the Tanzanian. For now, stay blessed and I'll see you next time.